The open source story today that I want to lead with is EVE Online's Carbon Engine going open source. EVE Online is one of the longest running massively multiplayer online games in existence, launched in 2003, still running, still with a dedicated player base. The Carbon Engine is the underlying game engine that powers it, and CCP Games, now operating under the Fenris Creations name for this initiative, has released it publicly.
The business rationale, as explained in the GameIndustry.biz piece, is interesting. The Carbon Engine is not competitive infrastructure in the traditional sense. It's not the thing that makes EVE Online's gameplay distinctive. The gameplay, the economy, the political systems players have built over two decades, that's the value. Open sourcing the engine doesn't give anyone a shortcut to creating a competing EVE. What it does do is potentially extend the ecosystem of tools, mods, and integrations around the game, and it generates significant goodwill.
There's also a preservation argument here. EVE Online has a genuinely remarkable historical record. The in-game events, the player-driven political and economic history, the battles that involved real organizational coordination at scale. And having the engine open source means that future historians, researchers, and preservation efforts have access to the technical substrate needed to understand and potentially recreate that history. The HN comments touched on this. There's growing recognition that games are cultural artifacts, and their preservation deserves serious engineering attention.
Which connects to the Copy That Floppy story from Cambridge, a digital preservation guide for recovering data from fragile floppy disks. The 90 upvote score and 25 comments suggest modest but genuine interest. The guide is comprehensive, covering the hardware interfaces, the disk imaging software, and the format-specific challenges for different floppy standards, 5.25 inch, 3.5 inch, the various proprietary formats used by different platforms.
The scale of the preservation problem is worth stating. There are enormous quantities of data from the 1970s through the 1990s stored on floppy media that is actively degrading. Academic research data, software source code, organizational records, creative work, all of it is on physical media with a finite lifespan. The guide from Cambridge is a practical contribution to keeping that accessible, and the HN community appropriately flagged it as the kind of resource that deserves wider distribution.
The ZFS NAS guide, How to Build a Minimal NAS Without Synology, QNAP, or TrueNAS, scored 211 with 134 comments, which reflects genuine community investment. The guide argues that you can build a performant, reliable network-attached storage system using ZFS on commodity Linux hardware without the overhead of a commercial NAS appliance or the complexity of TrueNAS's full-featured distribution.
ZFS's reputation in the HN community is almost reverent. It's the file system that serious people use when they actually care about data integrity. The copy-on-write architecture, the checksumming at the block level, the snapshot and replication features, these are genuinely superior for home storage compared to the alternatives. The guide's argument is that the configuration complexity of rolling your own ZFS NAS is lower than people assume, and the cost savings versus commercial appliances are substantial.
Lineage OS statistics appearing with 108 upvotes and 63 comments is a nice companion piece. Lineage OS is the community-maintained Android fork that lets users run a current, maintained version of Android on devices that manufacturers have officially abandoned. The statistics page shows the current distribution of devices running Lineage OS, which tells a story about the longevity of hardware in the community's hands versus the planned obsolescence timelines of manufacturers.
The HN discussion touched on the regulatory dimension here. The EU's right to repair framework and proposed requirements for extended software support are relevant context for why Lineage OS exists and why there's demand for it. If manufacturers were legally required to provide security updates for longer periods or to make repair information available, the market for aftermarket software support would look different.
Now I want to do something we do periodically on this show, which is interrogate our own assumptions seriously. The technical consensus on this episode, and really across the developer community more broadly, has been pretty consistent on a few points. The most confident claim we've made today is essentially that client-side scanning, as proposed in Chat Control, is fundamentally incompatible with meaningful end-to-end encryption. The cryptographic community has stated this clearly, the HN community has amplified it, and we've repeated it.
And I think that consensus is correct. But let's take the challenge seriously. What would we be missing if we're wrong? The strongest counterargument is that the technical community tends to evaluate proposals like chat control purely on their cryptographic properties and ignores the empirical question of whether the current status quo, fully encrypted messaging at scale, is actually producing acceptable outcomes from a child protection standpoint. There are law enforcement agencies and child protection organizations that argue, with documented case evidence, that end-to-end encryption has made certain categories of investigation essentially impossible, and that children are being harmed as a direct consequence.
If you weight that harm heavily enough, and these are real children being abused in documented cases, then the argument shifts from, is client-side scanning technically compatible with strong encryption, to is perfect encryption the right policy priority given the trade-offs? Those are different questions. The first is primarily a cryptographic question with a fairly clear answer. The second is a policy question where reasonable people with access to the same facts reach different conclusions.
The assumption that might be wrong is that the endpoint of strong encryption is clearly preferable to any system that involves scanning once you've weighed all the harms. The counterargument isn't that backdoors are safe. It's that the absence of backdoors also has costs that the technical community tends to discount because those costs fall on different people than the ones whose threat models cryptographers typically optimize for.
What would need to be true for the opposite conclusion to hold? You'd need to believe that a client-side scanning architecture could be implemented in a way that is genuinely limited to its stated purpose, that the governance mechanisms preventing scope creep are credible and durable, and that the detection systems are accurate enough that the false positive rate doesn't create its own civil liberties crisis. None of those conditions currently hold, but they're not inherently impossible. The argument against chat control is as much about the current implementation as about the concept.
If we're wrong about this, the signal to watch for would be a rigorous, independent technical audit of a deployed client-side scanning system in a country with strong rule of law that demonstrates the scope limitation claims are actually enforced in practice over a multi-year period. That hasn't happened. The conversation would need to update. Until then, the cryptographic consensus seems well-founded, but intellectual honesty requires acknowledging what the other side of the argument actually is.